The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is Cornerstone Connection, the radio ministry of Pastor Gary Hamrick of Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. Pastor Gary is teaching through Acts.
Real love is calling, listen, truth opens up your eyes. Mercy is waiting for you with every sunrise.
Happens in 1 Kings 17, happens in 2 Kings 4, happens right here in Acts chapter 20. So this is a miracle, and don't overlook it thinking, you know, well, this is just a guy who got the wind knocked out of him. No, he puts his arms around him, threw himself on the young man. I'm sure he probably, you know, it doesn't say this, but if we know 1 Kings 17, 2 Kings chapter 4, and you know that Paul was schooled in the scriptures, you know that he's thinking, okay, this is what Elijah did, this is what Elijah did. I'm going to follow the model of how God honored miracles.
Have you ever wondered why the Old Testament is so important? The Old Testament explains the formation of the world and how it all led to Jesus. Now, if you're new to Christianity, you might look at the first half of the Bible and dismiss it. But Pastor Gary is here to tell you that the Old Testament is not only history, but an account of everything God did through His people. God used men like Abraham and David to bring Jesus into the world. And at the same time, God used prophets like Daniel and Elisha to carry out His will. At the close of Pastor Gary's message today, I'll be sharing with you how you can get a copy of today's broadcast of Cornerstone Connection. Subscribe to the podcast or get in touch with us. But for now, let's join Pastor Gary in the book of Acts chapter 19 with today's edition of Cornerstone Connection.
We find ourselves in chapter 19 here in Ephesus still. Ephesus situated on the eastern shoreline of the Aegean Sea, population in the first century around 300 to 500,000 people. It was considered the third most populated city in the Roman Empire at this time. Today, only a small Turkish village named Hagia Seleuk remains where the ancient ruins of Ephesus once stood. It is located along a major trade route, so that's why it was a very popular and populated city. And it was most well known for its worship of Artemis, who was the goddess of sex and fertility. Now, some of your Bibles refer to her as Artemis. The NIV uses the Greek name for her. If you have a King James Bible, it uses the Roman name for her, which was Diana. And as I mentioned last week, she is indeed Dirty Diana, because if you remember, she's the goddess not only of the moon and the hunt, but also of sex and fertility. Nothing wrong with sex. That's the way God designed it, except when you use sex outside of God's design, which was limited to a marriage between a man and a woman. And in her case, there was sex became a form of worship. And it included 1,000 temple prostitutes employed in the worship of Artemis or Diana at any given point. The Temple of Artemis, as I said, considered one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. It wasn't discovered more recently until British archaeologist John Wood found the site of the Temple of Diana, Temple of Artemis, December the 31st, 1869. So I wanted to remind us of all of this because this is the scene, and the fact that Artemis was so worshipped, so revered, so venerated here leads us to this riot that is going to ensue, because Paul is preaching something other than the goddess Artemis. He is preaching the God Jesus. And so that's going to be a conflict here in this Greco-Roman culture. So we left off at verse 23. Let's pick it up there. Chapter 19 of Acts, verse 23 says, "About that time, there arose a great disturbance about the way." Remember, we talked about how the way was another name for Christianity, mentioned six times in the book of Acts. So that becomes a label for Christianity. So a great disturbance about Christianity, about the way. And here's what happened. Verse 24, a silversmith named Demetrius, who made silver shrines of Artemis, or Diana, brought in no little business for the craftsmen. Okay, so it's telling us that Demetrius, quite a successful silversmith, he would make these little idols, these little statues of Diana, of Artemis. Archaeologists have discovered ancient little idols of Artemis. She is a multi-breasted idol, again, kind of accentuating her being the goddess of sex and fertility. And so he's making a living out of crafting these idols of Artemis. And so verse 25, he called them together, the other craftsmen, along with the workmen in related trades and said, men, you know, we receive a good income from this business. And you see and hear how this fellow Paul has convinced and led astray large numbers of people here in Ephesus and in practically the whole province of Asia. Please note that when someone doesn't like that you believe in Jesus and that you're leading other people to faith in Jesus, they're going to say you're leading people astray. So that's his perception. Paul is actually liberating people, bringing people into the truth of the gospel. But in Demetrius's mind, Paul is leading people astray. And what's the greatest threat here? Money. He's making a good living off of these little idols of Diana, and now all of a sudden Paul comes in here, preaches the good news of Christ, sets people free from the worship of these false gods, which is what they were doing. The Greeks and the Romans worshipped many gods. They were polytheistic culture. Now you start to worship the only true and living God, you have no more need for the little idols. And now Demetrius is going to go out of business. So he brings all the other business, you know, shops, craftsmen, workers, and he gives them this little speech. Continuing in the middle now, verse 26, he says about Paul that he says that man-made gods are no gods at all. That's what Paul's preaching. He says in verse 27, there is danger not only that our trade will lose its good name, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout the province of Asia, and the world will be robbed of her divine majesty. So now, how much of this is he actually believing, and how much is he using this as leverage? We don't really know. But he is appealing to two things. The one I already mentioned, he's appealing to their livelihood. Money is at stake here, and people will do crazy things for money, all right? We all know this. So he's like, money's at stake here. We're going to lose our business. If people start getting converted, they won't buy our little idols. The other issue he says here, he appeals to their national pride. He's like, we've got this huge temple here of Artemis. You know, this is, and if he gets his way, if Paul gets his way and leads people to Christ, this other God, okay, it's going to be a discredit and a disgrace to our national pride. We have the temple of Artemis right here in Ephesus. You don't want to see this happen, do you? And so he's stirring up the crowd. Okay, they're getting really riled up here. So look at verse 28. When they heard this, they were furious and began shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians!" And soon, note this, the whole city was in an uproar. How many did I tell you were living in Ephesus at this time? 300,000 to 500,000 people. Now, is this literally the whole city? Or is it, you know, when we talk about how something took over a city and had a great influence, we say the whole city. I don't know that it's 300,000 to 500,000 every single person, but it's enough, probably multiple thousands. Because look what happens. The people seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia, and rushed as one man into the theater. So if they needed a big venue because they got a big mob, I can see this place packed. Now, you can't get the whole city in this theater, but you can get a good number of the people of the city in this theater. So I want you to imagine now a mob of tens of thousands of people. They've gotten all stirred up. This one guy, Demetrius, has gotten everybody fired up about Paul. But you know what? You know what is so? I mean, I shouldn't be laughing, but I mean, you know, when you look at here, they're all angry at Paul, but they don't drag him into the theater. They drag his friends. They seize, look again, verse 29, Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's traveling companions. They pulled those guys into the theater. Can you see them being hauled into this mob like, hey, it's not us, it's Paul, you know? But anyway, they get pulled in there. And in verse 30, it says Paul wanted to appear before the crowd. He wanted to go in there and address. I mean, now look, let me finish the verse. Paul wanted to appear before the crowd, but the disciples would not let him, Even some of the officials of the province, friends of Paul, sent him a message begging him not to venture into the theater. So we don't know all the details here. Is it that in the chaos of the mob, they didn't really know where Paul was? And so they grabbed two of his traveling companions who were nearby. Or is it just in the chaos of things, Paul doesn't get moved in there with them? We don't know all the details. What we do know is that Paul wants to go in. And, you know, he's a good friend. He doesn't want Gaius and Aristarchus to be, you know, hung out to dry. He'd rather go in there. He wants to address the crowd. But I wonder personally, just when you look at the rest of Paul's ministry, if part of it was because he's thinking, yeah, I might die, but on the other hand, I got the potential to preach the gospel to 25,000 people in this theater, so I want to go on in there. We don't know. But the people who loved him were like, you don't want to go in there because you might die. The mob is that mad. So he doesn't end up going in there. Now look at verse 32. It says, the assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, some another. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. So it's like, people are getting accosted. People are yelling. They don't even know why they're there. Let's keep reading. Verse 33. And so the Jews pushed Alexander to the front, and some of the crowd shouted instructions to him. He motioned for silence in order to make a defense before the people. Now, let me explain. Who is this guy? Who's Alexander? Alexander is a Jew. The Jews push him in front of the crowd. Now, here's why. Because Alexander represents the Jewish population that is living there in Ephesus. We know that there is one. And the Jews want this mob to know, we're not a part of Paul's group. We're just, leave us Jews alone. These are the ones who don't identify as Christians. These are just Jews who don't believe in Jesus as Messiah. They're wanting this angry mob to know, please don't kill us just because we're Jewish like Paul is, okay? We don't follow his way, all right? We're just respectful Jews who worship God. Now, it doesn't work, though, because verse 34, but when they realized he was a Jew, they all shouted in unison for about 2 hours. 2 hours. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. So in other words, it didn't matter to the Greeks that Alexander was saying, we don't really belong to Paul's group. Because what they were saying was, we're Jewish. Well, that means you don't worship Artemis either. So why don't you just keep your mouth shut and go sit down? And then they start shouting for 2 hours. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. You know, they're doing like the wave in the theater. It's like an incredible moment here. They're high-fiving each other. They're tweeting this out. Anyway, here they go. But now, verse 35, the city clerk quieted the crowd. So we got somebody here who has a little bit of reason, quieted the crowd and said, men of Ephesus, doesn't all the world know that the city of Ephesus is the guardian of the temple of the great Artemis and of her image, which fell from heaven? And by the way, you can look historically, they have discovered a large meteor. I guess it's meteorite, I suppose, when it finally hits. So, and they believe that is what they were worshiping as the gift from Artemis that dropped out of the sky. So anyway, verse 36, therefore, the city clerk is talking still, therefore, since these facts are undeniable, you ought to be quiet and not do anything rash. You have brought these men here, though they have neither robbed temples nor blasphemed our goddess. If then Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a grievance against anybody, the courts are open and there are proconsuls. They can press charges. If there's anything further you want to bring up, it must be settled in a legal assembly. As it is, we are in danger of being charged with rioting because of today's events. In that case, we would not be able to account for this commotion since there is no reason for it. And after he had said this, he dismissed the assembly. So cooler heads prevail here, and the city clerk comes up and basically says, listen, you know, we don't have any really legitimate charges against these guys. If you want to bring charges, let's do it through the official channels. You all can press charges, take these guys to court. We'll put them in front of the proconsuls. We'll decide if they've broken any laws. And 25,000 people are like, nah, it's not worth it. And then they leave. They all go back to their homes. Well, chapter 20, when the uproar had ended, Paul sent for the disciples. These are the disciples of Ephesus. If you remember back in the beginning of chapter 19, when he first gets to Ephesus, he meets some disciples who are there. So he sends for them, and after encouraging them, said goodbye and set out for Macedonia. So we're going now from Ephesus across the Aegean Sea to the upper region, the upper left of your screen there. That is ancient Macedonia, the cities of Philippi, Neapolis, and Thessalonica, and Berea. He's going to go there. He's going to visit. And it says, he set out for Macedonia. Verse 2, he traveled throughout that area, speaking many words of encouragement to the people, and finally arrived in Greece, where he stayed for 3 months. And so now he goes south a little bit to Greece, cities of Athens and Corinth, spends 3 months there. Who wouldn't want to? I mean, somebody's got to be on the mission field, and Greece and the Greek islands are a wonderful place to share Christ. And so there he goes. And verse 4, it says that he was accompanied by Sopater, son of Pyrrhus, from Berea, Aristarchus and Secundus from Thessalonica, Gaius from Derbe, Timothy also, and Tychicus and Trophimus from the province of Asia. These men went on ahead and waited for us at Troas. But we, circle the word we, because now it tells us that Luke, who is the author of Acts, has now joined him, because he's writing in the pronoun we. But we sailed from Philippi after the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and 5 days later joined the others at Troas, where we stayed 7 days. So they go back across the Aegean Sea. They're now in Troas, which is Asia Minor, which today in a map we're talking about Turkey. So this is where now the following event is going to take place. And this is somewhat, I don't know, cute, I guess, is the word I'll use here. But because it starts out tragic, but it ends up very nicely. So, but this is why I say it's cute. Look at verse 7. On the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Please note, by the way, first day of the week is, it's not Monday. Monday is the work week, right? First day of the week is Sunday. Sunday is the day that Christ rose from the dead. Please note that there's a pattern throughout Acts where they continue to meet on Sunday, even though the Sabbath has not changed, that the Sabbath technically is still sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. I would just respectfully disagree with my Seventh-day Adventist friends who say that the Lord's Day is still on Saturday to worship, because you see the pattern throughout the book of Acts, and here's one of them, where Sunday becomes the regular day of worship and celebration in ongoing commemoration of the resurrection of Christ. And so that's what they're doing. On the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Paul spoke to the people, and because he intended to leave the next day, kept on talking until midnight. Friends, that's why I think this is a cute passage, because I feel inspired by Paul. Now, how do you feel about that, right? I mean, you know, I can joke about it, but can you imagine? We're going to be here till midnight, please. But they're just absorbing this. They are profoundly mature Christians right here, friends. Like, we're going to have a Bible study till midnight. Bring it on, Paul. And so verse 8, there were many lamps in the upstairs room where we were meeting. Okay, got to get the picture here. It's not to create the ambiance, all right? This is first century. They don't have any lights. So they got lamps, a lot of lamps going. But you have a lot of lamps going, you got a lot of heat generated, okay? So a lot of lamps burning here. Verse 9, seated in a window was a young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. Isn't this a cute story? This is a cute story here. Now, notice it says he fell into a deep sleep. The Greek word there for sleep is hypnos. It's where we get our English word hypnotic. He gets into this hypnotic state. Paul is just going on and on and on. And Eutychus, it says he's a young guy. So I'm picturing, you know, like he's 18 maybe. He's in the windowsill. And all the lamps are going. He's like, man, this is just kind of, when will Paul stop? Well, you know, and he's starting to nod off a little bit. I mean, it's midnight, okay? Cut the guy some break. I mean, I've been preaching to you guys for many years now. And I can tell you, I see people dozing off. You know, the beauty is, if you doze off and happen to fall out of your chair, you're only going to fall about 3 feet. Look at what happens to this kid. So, when he was sound asleep, he fell to the ground from the third story. He falls straight out of the window, and he dies. Now, this is the part where we shouldn't be laughing anymore, but there's a good outcome here. He falls out of the third-story window because Paul's just droning on and on. You know, the Eutychus is sitting there going, okay, already, baptism, we get it. Can we move on? Well, he moves on, and he moves on out the window, three stories down, and he gets picked up dead. Verse 10, Paul went down, threw himself on the young man, and put his arms around him. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "He's alive." Now, the guy has died because it tells us in the previous sentence that they picked him up dead. So this is not, oh, we got the wind knocked out of him. Okay, he fell three stories, friends, all right? He didn't get the wind knocked out of him. He died here. This is a miracle. So don't overlook the miracle thinking, oh, you know, Paul just gave him a little CPR, a little mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, everything worked out, just had the wind knocked out of him. No, the guy died. But what Paul is doing here is very similar to what we read in the Old Testament concerning Elijah the prophet and Elisha the prophet. They both had similar miraculous events. In 1 Kings 17, Elijah put his body over top of the widow's son who had died and prayed for this boy to come back to life, and that's exactly what happened, and God brought about a great miracle. Similar thing happened in 2 Kings chapter 4 with Elijah's understudy, Elisha, with the Shunammite's son. Same thing. Stretched out, over top, body to body, and there was this honoring of God to pass the virtue of one life to another to raise these young men from the dead. Happens in 1 Kings 17, happens in 2 Kings 4, happens right here in Acts chapter 20. So this is a miracle, and don't overlook it thinking, you know, well, this is just a guy who got the wind knocked out of him. No, he puts his arms around him, threw himself on the young man. I'm sure he probably, you know, it doesn't say this, but if we know 1 Kings 17, 2 Kings chapter 4, and you know that Paul was schooled in the scriptures, you know that he's thinking, okay, this is what Elijah did, this is what Elisha did. I'm going to follow the model of how God honored miracles in the Old Testament. And so that's what he does, and God brought this young man back to life. Verse 11, this is cute too, because it says, "Then he went upstairs again and broke bread and ate." We're hungry, you know. It's been a good church service where it's still midnight. We've just raised somebody from the dead. How about let's order a pizza? So they have a good meal, and after talking until daylight, friends, he went back on to preaching. After talking until daylight, then he left. And I wonder if the people were sad. I'm sure they were sad. Phew, till daylight. And the people took the young man home alive. Another indication that he was, in fact, dead. Took the young man home alive and were greatly comforted. Well, again, you know, the reason why this was an all-night meeting, an all-night prayer and Bible study service was because he's getting ready to leave Ephesus, and he wants to say goodbye, and this is going to be a tearful departure here. And so it says here in verse 13 that when we went on ahead to the ship and sailed for Assos, where we were going to take Paul aboard, he had made this arrangement because he was going there on foot. And when he met us at Assos, we took him aboard and went on to Mytilene. And the next day we set sail from there and arrived at Chios. And the day after that we crossed over to Samos, and on the following day arrived at Miletus. Okay, that's the key place. This is Miletus. It's about 50 miles south of Ephesus. So all those other cities we just read are scattered throughout various islands there in the Aegean Sea. He's backpedaling. He basically backpedals until he gets to Miletus, and then he's going to take a ship on towards Jerusalem.
That's all for today's edition of Cornerstone Connection. What are some things you've taken away from the messages here in Acts? Would you let us know? You can get in touch with us by sending an email to prayer@cornerstonechapel.net. While you're sharing what you've learned, feel free to send us a prayer request so we can know how to be praying for our listeners. That email again is prayer@cornerstonechapel.net. Our radio ministry is an outpouring of what's going on here at Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. Pastor Gary teaches every Sunday at 8:30, 10, and 11:45 a.m. We also meet at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays. To learn more about who we are go to cornerstoneconnection.cc. We're so happy that you're part of our listening audience, and we'd be delighted to meet you and hear your faith journey. Like so many of the people mentioned in Acts, there's much transformation that happens in a person's heart when they seek to follow after God. We hope that's the case for you, too. All that to say, we hope you'll continue to tune in to these messages and keep growing as you dig into the book of Acts with us. We'll be right here, same time, same place, at Cornerstone Connection.
They say you're a wandering soul, that you've got no place to go, but still you know, you're not alone.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.